I'd like to thank the organizers for giving me this opportunity of the talk and in this wonderful workshop. So today I'm going to talk about my recent work with Nozomu Kobayashi, a graduate student in our group, and two postdocs, Yoshiki Sato and Kento Watanabe. And there also some work in progress with Kanata Goto and Rento Nagano and Okuda, Takuya Okuda. Okay, so let me start with the overview of my talk. So first, I'd like to talk about DPX CFT, so which we have already heard in this workshop many times. And I also turn to the considered entanglement entropy and sphere-free energy in DPX CFT, and how they depend on the defect. And also, I finally turn to talk about the C theorem. So there exists a C theorem in DPX CFT. Okay, so now, okay, as we already know that the defects are just a non-local object in quantum field theory, in most cases, they are defined by boundary conditions. So in the case of Tofust operator, so you have line here, and which are characterized by the magnetic flux surrounding this line. So in one-dimensional case, they are called line operators, so based on two operators. And in two dimensions, they are called surface operators. And also, so in the codimension one case, so there are many names, but domain walls, interfaces, and also boundaries. So domain walls and interfaces are just some object which separates two series, so T1 and T2. And less unfamiliar example is a codimension two cases. So one example is an entangling surface. So when you calculate entanglement entropy, so you naturally end up with entangling surface. And when you apply so-called Rebrica trick, then the boundary of the so-called entangling region can be regarded as an operator, which creates some conical defect. But in this talk, I like to focus on conformal defects, so in Euclidean CFTs. So in Euclidean CFT, conformal group is SOD plus 1, CAM 1. And now I focus on p-dimensional conformal defects. So I like to keep as much as symmetry. So I only focus on flat or spherical cases. And then so I can preserve a conformal symmetry on defects, which is SOP plus 1, comma 1. So here I have flat defect of p dimension. So then I have conformal symmetry. And also I still have a SOD minus p symmetry, so which is a rotational symmetry around the defect. So there are bulk operators here, but still, so you also have additional operators, so defect local operators, so with hat. And here, x hat is a coordinates on the p-dimensional defect. So once you focus on conformal defects, so you can say many things. You can constrain the types of correlation functions using conformal residual conformal symmetries. So for instance, in the case of one-point function, so let's start with scalar primary. So in DCFT, so usually the wave of one-point function vanishes in CFT, but in the DCFT, so it's not necessarily zero. So since you have a special direction, so transverse to the defect, so the one-point function takes this form. So you have one constant AO, and x perp is a transverse coordinate. And if you go to the stress tensor, then it can be completely fixed up to one constant, AT. And here, so you use the conformal symmetry and also a conserved conservation law. So here, you see that when P is equal to D minus 1, so namely codimension 1 case, the wave of the stress tensor vanishes. I wrote that BCFT, but it's also true for any CFT, it's a DCFT with codimension 1 defect. Okay, so this will be slightly important in my talk. So there are many applications of conformal defects. As we already heard in this workshop, So using crossing symmetry, so you can constrain some bulk safety data. So you can relate the bulk safety data with bulk to defect data, so OP coefficients, using through these relations. And also, in some cases, okay, so if you have CFT and if you have two spherical regions, and then so you can rewrite the mutual information. So you can define so-called mutual information between two regions, which is just some combination of the entanglement entropies. But this quantity is actually can be calculated as a correlation function of the defects associated with the boundary of these two balls. So once you know what this operator is, then you basically you can compute the two-point functions of these. But okay, at least and the kinematical part can be completely fixed by conformal symmetry. So you just need to know the OP coefficient for this defect. Okay, so there are some potential applications of conformal defects. But in this talk, I want to focus on the entanglement entropy and also sphere free energy and how they depend on defect data. So in the case of entanglement entropy, so I mostly focus on just the spherical regions and which intersects with a defect or it surrounds the defect. Okay, so this is just a codimension one case. And also, similarly, in the sphere free energy case, I put a conformal defect on sphere, and I'd like to compute the sphere partial function in the presence of these defects and how they depend on the types of defects. Okay, and also, I'm also interested in how to measure the degrees of freedom, so which is associated with defects. So, naively, it's okay, you can put some, you can couple the lower dimensional field theory to higher dimensional safeties. And in some cases, they are conformal. So then, so it is natural to ask how to measure the degrees of freedom living, coming from the defect. So I'd like to partially answer these two questions. Okay, so let me move on to the second part. Okay, so now I'm going to talk consider the spherical regions here. So this is the Lorentzian signature. You have a time and you have time slice, and I have a ball. This orange curve is the boundary of the ball of radius r, and this boundary is usually called the entangling surface. And now I put a p-dimensional flat defect. Okay, in this sphere, it's just a line defect. So this is a kind of special configuration. So the reason why I focus on this configuration is that you can apply so-called CHM map to compute the entanglement entropy. So this is a very special configuration, so where you can make a conformal transformation to a sphere. Okay, I won't explain how to do this, but it is well known, even in the presence of defects. Okay, so which was done by Andy, I think, in the audience. Okay, so then, so you use a replica trick. So replica trick is just starting with the so-called Renyi entropy, and you calculate the Renyi entropy, and then you take n goes to one limit to get the entanglement entropy. And after performing conformal transformation, the Renyi entropy end up with a calculating the partial function. In the presence of a defect on a sphere. But this sphere is slightly different from the original sphere because of some conical defect around this orange curve. So to distinguish this space-time, so I just call this guy as the n-fold cover of the sphere. Okay, so this is the figure of the n-fold cover. So here you have some fixed points of some U1 action, so okay, tau is some circle, and sigma is a previous entangling surface. So this entangling surface is always a fixed point of tau direction. So you have a sigma here, and usually, so okay, in the previous configuration, so okay, we had a line at the center, but now, so the conformal defects in Euclidean signature is now wrapping around this tau circle. Okay. And now, so but okay, when tau has a 2 pi periodicity, so this is nothing but a round sphere, but once you consider the n-fold cover, it has singularity on sigma. So now, but I'd like to consider the defect entropy, so which is defined in this way. So I'm interested in the excess of entanglement entropy coming from the defect. So I subtract the bulk contribution. So I subtract the Rényi entropy without a defect from the entropy of the with the defect, and take n goes to one limit. So using the previous formula, so you can rewrite it in this way. So it is basically computing the BEB of the defect operator on the n-fold cover of the sphere. So the BEB of the defect operator is defined in this way. So you just take a ratio between the partial functions of the CFT and CFTs on the n-fold cover. And in the denominator, so, sorry for the, this confusing notation, but okay, here the denominator is the BEB of the defect operator on sphere to the n. Okay, so this is different. So this is the subscript and this is superscript. Okay, anyway, so once you can compute the BEB of the defect operator on this space, then you can calculate the defect entropy. So it's easy. So, but now, so we are only interested in n goes to one limit. So you can expand the partial, sphere partial function around n goes to one, n equal to one. And so, actually, so the n-fold cover of the sphere can be described by just rescaling the metric along tau direction. So then the metric variation is now proportional to n minus one. So you can expand the partial function in terms of this metric. So then the leading order is just a sphere partial function. And this is a subleading term, so which contributes to the defect entropy. And higher order term does not contribute because it has n one minus one squared order. OK, so now we need to evaluate this part. So without defect, the BEB of the stress tensor vanishes due to the conformal symmetry. So in this case, the entanglement entropy, so in CFT, so without any defect, is equal to log of the sphere partial function. So this is a well-known result by Cassini-Feld-Myers. So this is a beautiful result. But with defect, the BEB of the stress energy tensor does not vanish. So it is actually proportional to the universal constant, AT. So there is a non-trivial contribution coming from this term. Let me see. I think I skipped one. Oh, no. Okay. Okay, so after evaluating the second subleading term, so we find some universal result between defect entropy and sphere free energy. So the left-hand side is defect entropy, and of course it starts with a sphere free energy. So here I call the log of the BEB of D as a sphere free energy, and this comes from the second term, which is proportional to AT. And here I assume the dimensional regularization. So when I perform the conformal transformation, I assume that there is no conformal anomaly coming from bulk and also the defects. So I assume that dimensional regularization works here. But you see that there are some poles in the gamma functions, so which means that there are some conformal anomalies depending on the bulk dimension and the defect dimensions. Okay. Also, okay, so this equality holds up to UV divergences. Since I use the dimensional regularization, so I don't care about UV divergent parts. I just compare the universal parts of both sides. So this result is consistent with a known result obtained by Luke with Maldacena when p is equal to 1. So they consider the excess of entanglement entropy coming from Wilson loops. And our result is consistent with theirs. And also, okay, you see that the second term vanishes when and the defect is a codimension one. So because, okay, this factor vanishes. So in BCFT and also the interface CFTs, and then basically the defect entropy is equal to sphere free energy. So now as an example, so let me consider the interface entropy. So here I have an interface which separates the two series with different, say, parameters, CFT plus and CFT minus. And I define an interface entropy in this way. So I have an entanglement entropy of the total system. I can compute it using replica trick, for instance. And I subtract the average of the entanglement entropy of two series, okay, in this way. And you apply the previous formula, so the interface entropy is given by log of the web of interface. So web of the interface is now just a ratio of the sphere partial functions, okay? So okay, now so let me consider the SUSY cases in 2D and 4D. So I like to think about the 2,2 series in two dimensions and the n equal 2 series in four dimensions. So in these cases, the partial function is now okay. Usually in SCFTs, okay, sphere partial function is proportional to the r to the minus 4a. So here r is the radius of the sphere, and A is a type A center charge. And also here I have a cutoff scale because, okay, sphere partial function can capture the A-type anomaly. But the subleading term, okay, so this term is usually non-universal due to this UV divergence. Okay, once you rescale epsilon, then so this part also does scale, does change. So this part is a ambiguous, but still, so this part is shown to take this form. So this K is a K-ray potential on a conformal manifold. So if you have a conformal manifold of SCFTs, then the partial function is a function on the conformal manifold, and which is given in this form. So this is a very beautiful result. So this K is kind of ambiguous because of the K-ray ambiguities. But now, so I'd like to insert a half BPS Jans interfaces in these series. Okay, so here you have sphere and you have interfaces separating north hemisphere and south hemispheres. And you have different couplings. So this is, okay, you imagine that this is just a complex couplings. So then the partial function, the sphere partial function is given by the original sphere partial function with some analytic continued parameters. So you have in the holomorphic part you have tau plus, and anti-holomorphic part you have tau minus. In this way, you can check that this, okay, you can check this using localization, for instance. But okay, as I said, so, okay, there is a pair of ambiguities which is also related to the existence of some supergravity counterterm. Anyway, okay, so K itself is ambiguous, but interestingly, so if you calculate the interface entropy, so there is no ambiguities. Okay, but okay, now I'm going to apply my previous formula relating interface entropy and sphere partial functions. But here, so we want to preserve supersymmetries, so I need to care about the regularization, so which is consistent with supersymmetry. So to this end, I use supersymmetry Rényi entropies, which I introduced with Itamar in the audience a few years ago. The result actually doesn't change, except that you just take the absolute value for the partial function. And if you apply the previous expression, then so the interface entropy takes this form. And this right-hand side is called Calabi's diastasis, which is free from the K-ray ambiguity. So you see that there is no A-dependent part. So bulk part completely cancels out. And you end up with a finite part. But OK, so you have K-ray potentials. But this combination does not have any clear ambiguities. So the interface entropy itself is a well-defined. So this result agrees with the known result in two dimension, which was calculated by these gentlemen a few years ago. And also, this is a reproduces a conjectured form in four dimensions. So this was conjectured by Goto and Okuda last year. This is one application of our result. Okay, so now let me move on to the C theorem. So let me briefly review what C theorem means. So here I have a space of quantum field theories, and I have say I imagine that there are some RG flow connecting two CFTs. So one is at the UV and one is at the IR. So if there are such an RG flow, then the C theorem states that there exists some function on this space of QFTs, such that if there exists an RG flow from TUV to TIR, then the value of this function C has to decrease in this way. So namely, so this function CT is a height function on the space of QFTs. And so this height function always has to, RG flow is just goes down always along the RG flow. So this is the meaning of the C theorem. Of course, the statement is clear, but it's not easy to define such a function in CFTs, in QFTs. So if such a function exists, then it can be regarded as a measure of degrees of freedom. So it would be nice to have such a function. And it also, if C theorem holds, then you can get some constraint on the dynamics on QFTs. And there are several examples. And in two dimension, this is very famous Zamolskiy C theorem. And in even D dimensions, so they are called A theorem. And here A is a A-type anomaly. Conformal anomaly. So in even dimension, there always exists one A-type anomaly. But in odd dimensions, there are no central charges, conformal anomalies. But instead, it is proposed that there exists some so-called F theorem. So F theorem uses the sphere partition function as a measure of degrees of freedom. And these theorems has a proof using some monotonic properties of entanglement entropy when these less than or equal to 4. So, in higher dimensions, there are more general conjectures. It is called generalized F-theorem conjecture proposed by Simone and Igor. So this is very beautiful result, conjecture, because it interprets between even and odd dimensions. So basically, you calculate sphere partition function. So this is a partition function sphere, and you multiply sine function. So and they define F tilde in this way. And this F tilde reproduces a anomaly, so conformal anomaly, when D is even. So when D is even, this part sine function becomes zero, but it cancels some pole of coming from the sphere partition function. So when you calculate the partition function using dimensional regularization, you have a pole coming from the gamma function. And this factor precisely cancels the pole, and you end up with the A anomaly. On the other hand, when these odd, then this gives you some sign, plus one or minus one, and which is agrees with the definition of F used in F theorem. So this is a, I think this is the most general conjecture for C theorem in higher dimensions. So this is the situation without defect. So the conjecture is that F tilde UV is always greater or equal to F tilde IR. So now let me move on to the status of C theorem in DCFT. So in two dimensions, in boundary CFT of two dimensions, there is a G theorem. The G theorem means that Okay, so there are several ways to define G-theorem, but one of them is that using entanglement entropy. So you calculate entanglement entropy in boundary CFD in two dimensions, and the subleading term and the finite part of the entanglement entropy must decrease along any boundary RG flow. So this is, it has two proofs. One is by Friedan and Konechny, and also the other is given by Cassini and his collaborators using some nice properties of entanglement entropy. So this is called G-theorem. And So this is the space-time dimensions, the bulk dimensions, and this is the defect dimensions. Okay, so now let me move on to the higher dimensional case. Okay, here you have surface operator, surface defect. So this is P equal 2 case. And in this case, there is a so-called B theorem proved by Andy and his collaborator. So in this case, okay, it is a very strong theorem because it can be applied to any higher bulk dimensions. In this case, you can define an analog of A anomaly associated with two-dimensional surface. And then such an anomaly always plays a role of C function. Okay, so this is a known theorem. And if you go to one higher dimensions, then so this is actually the boundary CFD in four dimensions. And there are proposals. Okay, one of them, okay, they are called boundary F theorem, which is proposed independently by Davide in the audience and Takaya Nagi and his collaborators. So in this case, you can define a hemisphere partition function, and you can measure the degrees of freedom using hemisphere partition function. So this is the proposal, but the rest of them are unknown. Okay, so now I want to fill in these blank slots somehow. So I think, to my best knowledge, there are two natural candidates for C functions. So one is using entanglement entropy. So the other is using sphere free energy. So both of them are very natural. So actually, there are several evidences. So in the holographic computations, which is done in the codimensional one case. In this case, in holographic models, entanglement entropy actually does decreases along along RG flows, defect RG flows. And also, there are several nice results for the sphere-free energies. So one is, of course, the boundary F theorem, and also B theorems also supports sphere-free energy to be a C functions. And also, so this morning, so we heard from Simone about the Wilson loop RG flows, so which also supports sphere-free energy as a candidate of C functions. So these two agrees when p is equal to d minus 1, so due to universal relation. So we need to look at the more non-trivial cases with higher codimensional defects. So there are several possibilities. So maybe both of them are good C functions, or maybe both of them are not. So there are several cases, and we did some calculations, and we end up with one conjecture. So we propose that, along defect RG flow, so we now focus on defect RG flow. So namely, we trigger a relevant perturbation on defects. Okay, so this is a defect localized operator, and we consider relevant defect perturbation of this type. And we argue that the universal part of the sphere-free energy defined by this does not increase along any defect RG flow. So you see that the similarity of our definition to the F theorem, okay, generalized F theorem. So now here we replace the sphere partition function with the BEB of the defects, okay? And we multiply the sine function depending on P, so, which is very similar to the F tilde used in generalized F theorem. So this is our proposal. And we did several checks, and in all examples we studied, the sphere free energy always decreases along defect energy flows. On the other hand, there are several counterexamples for the entanglement entropy to be a C function. So actually, so we already heard from Frame yesterday that the Wilson loop energy flow is actually can be a counterexample of using the entanglement entropy as a C function. So in the holographic Wilson loops, they found that the entanglement entropy can increase along energy flow. And there are several counterexamples found in people in the audience also. So now, so there are several counterexamples for the monotonicity of entanglement entropy. So this difference is actually comes from this term. So the term proportional to AT. So this is the one-point function of the Suess energy tensor. So this term actually does change the behavior of the entanglement entropy compared to the sphere proportion function. So now, so we can say at least that entanglement entropy cannot be a good C function. So on the other hand, we don't have any counterexamples for using sphere proportion function. Yeah, so far. Okay, so let me summarize my talk. First, so we found a universal relation between entanglement entropy and sphere free energy in the presence of defects. And we also considered the interface entropy with Janus interface. And we found that the interface entropy can be given by a Calabi's diastasis, which is free from ambiguity, so Kähler ambiguity. And we also proposed the C theorem, and we did several checks. So as a future work, we try to prove our conjecture in special cases, but we failed so far. But maybe so if you focus on supersymmetric cases, there might be a proof using some techniques such as X maximization or A maximizations. Also, maybe using entropic inequalities would be useful to prove our conjecture, because in the case of G theorem, Cassini and his collaborators gave us a proof, a nice proof in two dimensions. So another direction is that the way that we can get some non-trivial constraint on the dynamics of defect energy flows. So once we assume that our proposal is correct, then you may get some non-trivial constraints. And also, so this is kind of related to the recent work by Chris and also some people in the audience, probably. So, okay, actually, you can study the dependence of defect entropy or sphere proportion function on the bulk marginal deformation. Actually, for the case of sphere free energy, sphere free energy is actually depends on the bulk marginal deformation, so which is clarified by these papers. And maybe it's interesting to see if defect entropy also depends on the bulk marginal deformations. Okay, thank you very much.
Any question? If you just think about some effective field theory living on the defect, it's non-unitary, doesn't have a stress tensor, is there some sense in which the existing proofs just carry over directly, the existing proofs of A theorem, C theorem?
Sorry, could you repeat your question again? So existing proof of what?
That's not a very precise question. Maybe it's naive, but I'm just wondering if you just think about some effective theory living on the defect.
Effective theory.
Non-unitary, doesn't have a stress tensor. To what extent do the existing proofs of the A theorem, can they just carry over directly to the theory on the defect?
Existence proof. I don't think there is an existence proof of C theorem. Do you expect so?
No, not an existence proof, but the existing proofs, the proofs by Weber and Rogotsky.
There exists.
Entanglement entropy proofs. Is there some sense in which they can just carry directly over the effective theory living on the defect? Or is there some obstacle?
There are some obstructs. Actually, in the proof of B theorem, so they use similar techniques as a Komarovsky streamer. So maybe you can apply, say, the proof of A theorem to the defect cases as well. Yeah, indeed. So F maximization and A maximization may be also carried over to the cases with defects as well. So which might be very interesting. Yeah.
Any other questions? Just a question. So, can you expect that C function is some kind of function of the entanglement entropy, as in two-dimensional case?
Mm-hmm.
So, is it possible, or there are some reasons that it's not the case?
I'm sorry. Could you?
So, in two dimensions, so Cassini they constructed the C function in terms of derivatives of entanglement entropy.
Yes.
So is it possible that for higher dimensions you have such a function?
Yes. With defect or without defect?
In both cases, with defect.
Okay. Without defect, they actually constructed some monotonic function, even in higher dimensions. But their function is finite only when D is less than or equal to 4. If you go to 5 dimensions, their function has UV divergence. So they construct some function which has UV divergence, but what we want to prove is, say, the finite one. So F tilde is always finite. So this is a finite part of, say, entanglement entropy of a sphere. But their function gives us some proof of C theorem, which is different from generalized F theorem. Yeah. Their proof agrees with general F theorem when D is less than or equal to 4.
And it is without a defect. And what happens with defect?
With defect?
Yeah.
With defect, I don't know any higher dimensional analog of their proofs. Yeah. It's not clear how to generalize their methods. Because in the case of G theorem, they use very special properties of stress tensor in two dimensions. In two dimensions, stress energy tensor mostly satisfies some trivial relation. It is completely fixed by one parameter. But in higher dimensions, it's not true, and you cannot immediately get the same form.
Any other questions?
Thank you very much.